This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Hey, Chris, not too bad. Yourself?
Yes, not bad, thank you. How's the new PC?
Oh, the new PC is really nice.
Yeah.
It's a bit ridiculous having 24 threads on your own desktop.
Ah, well, if you're allowed to do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
Why not? What have you put in there in terms of storage?
I've got one NVMe PCIe 4 mm-hmm. drive, which makes a massive difference. I was quite surprised the difference between going from the PCIe 3 to 4. I didn't think it'd make a big difference, but boot times, you can almost not blink, and it's already booted. And I've got another NVMe device, and I've got another couple of just standard SSDs, so I've got 4 terabytes of flash in it. It's quite nice.
Amazing. Now, the reason I was asking you that question is because I wanted to know whether you had any Optane in there.
No. Well, this is an AMD platform. I'm not sure Optane's yet supported on the AMD
chipsets. Yeah, good point. Stopped. Good point. So no Optane in your platform, but it probably would have gone even quicker with Optane.
And yeah.
That's one of the, this is the topic of our conversation today. We're lucky enough to be joined by George Crump. And I'm going to have to say George Crump from Store One, not George Crump from what George Crump was doing before. So what's going on, George? Are you on the dark side?
Well, I guess so. You know, I as you guys know, I founded an analyst firm called Stuart Switzerland about 14 years ago. In that time frame, there's probably 3 companies that really intrigued me and thought, well, if I ever wanted to go to work again, that's what I would do. One of those companies was Store One. I've known the CEO, Gal Naor, for years since he, as you guys may recall, was the founder and CEO at StoreWise, which he later sold to IBM. And so anyways, I've always had a high degree of respect for him. He's a man of high integrity. And as we started to work more and more together, I thought, you know, this is a company and a technology that I think can really make a difference in the market and somewhere that I could really add a lot of value. So he basically bought the company, and my whole team now works for him.
Fantastic. So let's talk about Store One as a platform very briefly then, because you've sort of given us a little bit of an introduction. But what exactly is Store One as a platform? And talk through that about why it's different and, you know, what the evolution is compared to other platforms out there.
Sure. So the first thing is that Store One is what I would describe as a software-defined storage consolidation solution. And we call that the S1 Enterprise Storage Platform. What that means is we're able, through software, to do things that other storage consolidation solutions require really a lot of hardware to do. And the way we got there is through a high degree of efficiency. The software was written from scratch back in 2011 from the ground up. It took them about 5 years to get all the, you know, kind of initial development work and all that good stuff done, 5-6 years. And so what we ended up with was a software code base that extracted really more from all the resources that you would give it. So we get more performance on a per drive level. We don't require as much CPU power. We don't require as much RAM.
So you're racing right ahead there, George, into the detail we'll get onto in a second.
Sorry.
That's fine, but I just thought it would be good to sort of help people understand what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to very much focus on something you call the AFA.next. I was going to call it the Optane Flash Array, but I think it's going to be AFA.next in terms of branding, isn't it?
That's correct. Yeah, it's built on Intel Optane and actually Intel QLC SSDs, but we call it the AllFlashArray.next, or AFAN for short.
Okay. So, Martin, interesting to see that Optane starting to come into the market in, I wouldn't say dribs and drabs, but we're starting to see Optane appearing in different platforms, and this is going to be one. But, you know, what's your opinion in terms of how that has really sort of not evolved that quickly, but it is starting to happen, I think?
Yeah, it's starting to happen. I think we've been waiting for it for a bit. It would be really interesting to see what the impact is and what the ratio of Optane is to a standard flash. I mean, obviously, Optane is going to allow some real, what we like to call hero numbers, to be driven out of it. So it'd be interesting to understand where it's coming from and what the use cases are and how it's really going to change things. But we've talked about this before, Chris, about flash. I mean, we've talked about AFAs, not all AFAs are equal. And we've been expecting that we were going to see D different levels of flash. We expected that we were going to see faster flash. We were going to see SEM, storage class memory, come into play. We've not really seen it yet. So it's great to see some devices finally come through.
Yeah. I tell you what, George, why don't you just give people the background on Optane itself, seeing as you're using the technology in the platform, and then we can go on and talk about how specifically you're putting it in your platform and using it. I think that'd be quite useful.
Yeah, sure. So as Martin said, this is a technology that is really, often called storage class memory. It's sort of the next generation beyond flash. It has incredibly high write performance, which flash certainly is better than hard disk drives. But that's if it's an area of weakness, that's been an area or a problem for flash. It also is much more durable. It has a lot of characteristics of DRAM without sort of the negative side effect of being volatile, right? So it's a non-volatile memory technology.
Yeah, and we've seen sort of, I guess, an expansion of that hierarchy where previously we would have seen DRAM at the top, super endurant, but obviously volatile. And then we've seen NAND flash come in and sort of plug that gap a little bit above the hard drive. Mm-hmm. And then Optane is going in even more, I guess, at a higher resolution again and sort of plugging that gap yet again in the space above flash and below DRAM. It sort of has characteristics of both in some respects, doesn't it? So on one hand, it can act as a block device like we would normally use, say, flash, but actually you can write to it directly as memory, depending on how you've got it configured in your system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and different people have used it in different ways. It's actually seen as much adoption, I think, in desktop use cases, gamers and things like that. I think we've seen it in sort of the extreme high performance computing environments, AI, machine learning, things like that. We've seen really limited use in the enterprise. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that.
Okay. We'll get on to talk about that when we talk about how you're using it, because I think that's sure. Quite relevant. But I thought it would be good to talk about the devices from a desktop perspective. And it's a shame, Martin, of course, you've got an AMD system and not an Intel system. But we are seeing a mixture of Optane and QLC in consumer devices like the H10, where they're using the combination of those two technologies to accelerate the endurance of QLC and increase the performance without wearing that QLC out. So we're starting to see some devices that are doing this in the consumer space. And you're sort of using the Optane, I think, in a similar way, aren't you, in your platform?
Yeah, I think we're trying to be very judicious with it. But unlike a lot of other people that use it sort of as a cache, I want to say elevated, but that's not exactly the right term. But we're using it as a full class of storage, right? So we're treating it as a full citizen within the storage ecosystem.
We'll get into that in a second, but I think that question of cache or tier is really quite an interesting one, because it's quite difficult to get your head around sometimes if you don't think of the implications about going down one route or other. So obviously we've seen Optane used as an acceleration solution in other ways, but you're saying you're using it as a tier of storage in your platform. I mean, that means when the data's on there, it's on there. It's not in two places at once. It's on one place or the other in the system.
Exactly. And there's some responsibilities that come with being a tier and treating it as storage as opposed to being a cache, right? If I'm going to say you can keep data on here for an indefinite period of time, then that means I need to provide some level of protection from media failure. What a lot of people would probably think of as RAID, we call it V-RAID, which is actually a form of erasure coding, but you've got to be able to protect that data. The advantage, though, is now I can use it at its, for one of its biggest benefits, which I mentioned earlier, was that write performance, right? So I can get the full benefit of the write capabilities of this technology. If you're using it as a cache, generally speaking, you only have one drive. And then that means, you are forgiven the responsibility of providing data protection, but you also have to get data off of that drive as quickly as you possibly can, because you have a single point of failure at that point.
That's quite a subtle difference, I think, Martin, when you look at this, that, if you put something in as a tier of storage, then yes, you are going to protect it. If you put it in as cache, it's acting in a totally different way. And obviously, like George has just highlighted, if it goes wrong, then you potentially are fine, because you're not storing the data in that cache. You're not having to put the same level of protection on. But there are other challenges around performance that come out of that, aren't there? So, for instance, if you overload your cache, then you're going to hit that write cliff And you're going to have a real problem. And not everybody wants to use it as a write cache. Some people want to use it as a read cache. So getting that exactly right can be quite a challenge, I think.
Yeah, managing failure of cache has always been a challenge for a lot of devices. So yeah, George is right. I think we're going to see this more happen more often within Optane, full stop, as people start to use Optane as a storage tier, not as a cache. But obviously, if you're in a desktop or a server environment, you will use it slightly differently. So potentially, people are going to use it to accelerate databases. They'll have databases in there. So you still want to protect against a failure. So I think we may see some kind of deraid on desktops as well, as people try and protect against a failure, because you don't want to have to bring a system down potentially if you have a fail, or you're going to want hot swap. Optane is going to bring some challenges the way we actually think about memory in general.
Okay, well, let's dig into the platform in more detail. So, George, let's go into what S1 looks like, and then you can say how Optane is being implemented in the platform in itself.
So S1 is essentially software, right? And then within the allflasharray.next offering, what we're doing is tapping into everything that software can give us to deliver an enterprise experience to Intel Optane technology, right? So what we wanted to do was not create a product that was niched into high performance computing or AI or ML. Not that we couldn't play there, but give something to, you know, the normal data center, whatever that is nowadays, that we could assist classic workloads like VMware and Hyper-V and Oracle and Microsoft SQL and MySQL. And while those workloads don't get the headlines that they used to, I think they're still really important for that environment.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, those are the workloads which enterprises run. It's, everybody likes to talk about VML, VAI, these big hyper workloads. But the line of businesses are running fairly still. We're not seeing the innovation there yet. And these things won't go away. They're still going to be running with SQL databases. They're still going to be running VMware. So it is very important that we continue to progress in technology to support them as well.
I think you're right, Martin. I think looking at the actual way that we've gone in the last sort of 10, 15, 20 years, virtualization was probably the biggest change we've seen. And we talk about containers and containerization and how that's going to come along and change things. But essentially, I still think the majority of businesses run their what you might call mission critical applications on traditional OLTP block-based storage systems. And then they'll put other stuff out into other platforms. But essentially, that's still a core part of the enterprise business. And I don't really see that changing. The question, I guess, George, is what have you seen in terms of customers' demands that justify the need to accelerate to the level of putting something like Optane into the platform and the effective cost that then translates to?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, we'll talk about some, you know, heroic performance numbers here in a little bit, but the real number that, and we're guilty of it as anybody, the real number is what happens to latency as far as reduction. And I think in most environments, especially again in those classic workloads, they're going to benefit the most from latency. There are clearly some situations where high write performance are going to help you, and specifically in some database environments and things like that. But it's really the reduction in latency where these guys are seeing the benefit. And we're able to take environments and scale up those database environments and cut down the number of servers they need. And since most, at least to my knowledge anyways, most database applications and things of that sort now charge on a per core basis, right? And in some cases, it's not inexpensive per core. So the more servers, i.e. the more cores that I can eliminate, or another way to say it is the more cores I can get working harder, in many cases, the investment in this particular product pays for itself.
That's been a classic though, isn't it? If you look at across the industry, Martin, that idea of saying, well, make the performance go, improve the performance, and as a result, I actually can cram more on my server and therefore I can actually get more work done, because the storage has always been that slow point in the architecture. And if you don't make that run fast, then you have got a problem. But you can genuinely save money.
Yeah, but I don't think it's very well understood by people. The faster you can make your storage run, the more work your CPU can do. If you look on an average enterprise system, you know, you start digging into the CPU, if your storage is bottlenecking it, it's going to sit there waiting. And you're just going to see more and more problems. So if you speed up your storage, often the application speeds up, but it's not necessarily because the storage is faster. It just means the CPU is being able to do more work.
Yeah, and if I can add on to that, Chris, What we started to see is that once everybody went to the all-flash array, they felt that they solved those performance problems that they were experiencing, let's say prior to that. And in many environments, they didn't keep pushing it, right? And so what we're going to ask people to do with all-flash array.next is ask people to go ahead and push it again. Let's take the density of your virtual machines up a whole nother level. Let's take the number of users and transactions that you support on a per server basis up another level, because now we're going to give you the capability to do that.
Okay, well, let's now dig into the detail of how you're going to do that. So said the solution is software, which is great, yet the whole time we've talked about Optane. So we're not sort of tying the two up. So give us an idea of how you actually would go out and purchase the solution, what it would look like, and how the Optane fits into what would have been a non-Optane version of the system.
Sure. So the system runs on a Intel server using Intel Optane and Intel QLC SSD. So as you can tell, there's a lot of Intel there. It's a turnkey system. Our software is loaded, obviously, on that server. And then what we do is, to kind of manage costs, is we start with four Intel Optane drives, and then some number of QLC drives, depending on what your capacity needs are. All data comes into the Optane tier first. Again, because it's a tier, we let that data sit there as long as it can until the tier fills up. And then we basically use a high and low watermark system. So once we hit the high watermark, we take all the data that's between it and the low watermark and sequentially write that to the QLC tier. That becomes very important later when we talk about read performance off the QLC tier. Let me stop there. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, but I'd imagine that from both my perspective and Martin's, don't want to put words into your mouth, Martin, but that initially makes me think of a couple of things. First of all, how am I going to size the Optane pieces compared to my QLC? And in terms of that ratio, and I think that's something you, at the very beginning, Martin, were interesting to see how that would apply.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been that ratio of, it's the same as we've had with interiors in general. What is my ratio of fast to, in this case, slightly less fast? And how do I size it? How do I get it right? I mean, and it's always been this storage admin's thing, is to look at the cache depletion. In this case, we'll end up with tier depletion. So I'm assuming you're shipping tools and things to allow people to start estimating how big their cache should be, or their tier, Optane tier should be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the interesting thing is, for most people, the baseline system is going to give them more than enough capacity at that upper tier, the Intel Optane tier. I mean, you're looking at you're looking at about 3.1 terabytes of Optane tier. And what you're looking to calculate is what's your daily net new data change rate? And you want to be able to store that on there for as long as you can. For many people, 3 terabytes of daily changes is a lot. And so that, you know, they might be able to do a week even on that upper tier. We can scale the Optane tier to 8 drives if we need to. And that scaling can be done incrementally or granularly. So you could start with the 4 Optane drives and then later add 2 more if you decide you needed better write performance or better, you know, longer time on that tier. And then the QLC tier is just, you know, at that point, it's really how much capacity do you have?
So when I add those, am I adding them dynamically? I can just stick one in and the system will rebalance across the additional capacity I put in place?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, yep. So no reconfiguration of the of a RAID group or anything like that. I can just plug it in and go.
Yeah, you plug it in, it'll go. You could even start with a lower capacity Optane set of drives and then move to upper the 750s, which is today's, and then, you know, obviously we can feel pretty confident that a higher capacity set of Optane drives will be coming out. We can mix drive sizes within the same RAID group and use all the capacity of that drive.
I think that's really interesting and really valuable for anybody who's building these sort of systems, because when you start talking about that split between software and hardware, I sort of expect, you know, you're selling a software license effectively, although you may package it and sell it as hardware. But as a customer, I may choose to move things around. You know, if I had 10 of your arrays and I wanted to, you know, rebalance, would you let me do that within your configuration?
Yeah, sure. That's no problem with us. We'd be happy to let you do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that's the sort of thing I can see is likely to be more flexible. But I want to go back and just touch on one thing before I forget it. And that was the fact that you highlighted QLC performance. Now, the one thing that I think the Optane is giving here is that resilient write tier rather than that resilient read tier, which is what you might do if you were doing something with a cache, which seems to go against the benefit of Optane. Now, clearly the benefit is the write side of it, but what about everything that's been written to that device that then effectively gets archived or written off down to the QLC? I shouldn't probably use the term archive, should I? I should probably say aged out or something like that, down to the QLC layer. What happens when I want to go back and access that?
So that's where the technology gets very interesting. So as I said, we write, in terms of flash die anyways, pretty large sequential writes to that QLC tier. If you kind of flash back to the early days of hybrid technology, we were dealing with flash drives and hard disk drives. One of the reasons that all flash became so popular is a strong case was made that once it got to the hard drive, you better hope you never actually had to access it there because the performance difference between hard drive and flash was so great. We could argue whether or not that's true or not, but from a marketing standpoint, certain companies were very successful getting that point across. What we found, because of the way we were writing to the QLC tier and the fact that there's always going to be more QLC drives than there are Intel Optane drives, we were able to get read performance that was almost equivalent to the Optane tier. Okay, so for us, there's at that point, things change significantly if that's a truth. So first of all, I don't need to move data back up to the faster tier for access, because my second tier is as fast. Also, so what we do is if an application accesses older data, we just serve it right off of the QLC tier. That saves a whole bunch of bad things from happening, right? Number one, it keeps the write activity on the QLC tier at an absolute minimum. Number two, I don't have all that overhead of moving data up to Optane and then up to the application. I'm just serving it directly, so much lower latency as a result. And then if you assume that most accesses to old data are references, essentially, then you also have the advantage of really preserving the life of QLC. And so far in our testing, we're seeing about a 10x improvement on life expectancy of QLC than what is rated. And the reason for that is we've essentially, I'm using a bit of poetic license here, but we're using we've almost turned that QLC tier into a write once, read many tier, where data, we don't rewrite data to that tier. If you do access data off the older tier and you do change it, all we do is push the net new writes, even at a block level, up to Optane. We keep the other data down on the lower QLC tier.
So that would imply that you only ever rewrite down to QLC when you've got enough of a set of data to justify doing a sequential write, and you effectively manage the new writes in the Optane tier until you are in a position to push it down.
Exactly correct, yes.
So I just wanted to ask Martin about his opinion on this one. And this is a slight diversion, but going back to what George just said there, Martin, you look back at that original days of the hybrid array, then the all-flash array, and a lot of the all-flash arrays were sold on the idea that the hybrid one would have such a delta in performance between data that was on the hard drive and on the flash cache or tier or layer, and a lot of work was done to try and get around that. It seems to be that we're in a situation here with this sort of hybrid architecture, almost like a solid-state hybrid architecture, which is both SSDs and Optane, which actually works slightly differently to the way that the hybrid architecture would have worked before.
It appears so. But George makes some good points around this. There's certainly a way they're appearing to use a QLC to actually accelerate the read performance. By having a small amount of Optane and a smaller amount of devices there, obviously your potential for a write amplification and such things becomes much lower. And you're not waiting quite as long to get your act back. I mean, that's always been a problem with wide striping writes, is that your writes can only ever go as fast as your slowest device. So if you have a device which is for some reason performing slightly slower, everything starts to slow down. I think in this case, we're minimizing some of that risk.
And it brings into, I guess, not question, but it certainly makes you think that as we develop architectures going forward, that we have to sort of almost step back and say, well, actually, rather than trying to, like people said originally when they put Flash into a disk-based system, when people said, oh, it's, you know, you can't do that because you'll have to rewrite the code to optimize against the SSD, we saw that that was the way that it went forward, that people went away and said, okay, we're going to redesign and build solutions that specifically understand this media. I think we're almost at that same point again, where you're not going to be able to just drop Optane into your solution without having good enough code that actually understands that. And that seems to be, George, one of the things that you're really highlighting about your platform and the way that the company's gone, is that your ability to understand and build software that's efficient and using all of the capability of the media inside it.
Yeah, you're totally right. The efficiency, it's interesting. Optane really almost justifies us, or we justify Optane. I'm not sure who gets the most credit. I'm sure Intel would like Optane to get the most credit. But there's a couple of real key things about our feature, our software. The numbers that we'll talk about here in a second, you know, we're getting over 1 million read IOPS and 300,000 sustained write IOPS with the system. And that's with just three Optane drives, right? So four, it'll get even better. So we're getting about 85% of what Intel rates the drive to do. And so what that means is that the performance will scale. We've tested it now. We'll run out of NVMe bus before anything else becomes a problem. The other thing that's very important about that is that those numbers are without a write cache. Our system has no concept of a write cache. And so that's all written directly to media. So as Martin just said about the acknowledgments, when we acknowledge to an application that we've written data, we have actually written data. I know that's a kind of a strange concept, but it's true. We've actually written data when we say we have. And so our data integrity is unbelievably high as a result. And we're exploiting the full capabilities of that system. So the fact that we can get this high performance with a minimal amount of drives is a huge advantage for us. And the fact that we can do it without write caching is a further advantage, because if you can get that kind of performance without a write cache, not only is data integrity high, but you're also reducing a sort of another loop in the latency chain. So our latency gets better.
I was going to say, the other thing about that, if you start to eliminate the cache for DRAM cache tier, you improve your efficiency, energy efficient as well, because in a system, the traditional RAM chews through energy, and you simplify the whole design of the system as well. So you're not going to end up, I assume, with super caps or battery-backed or large amounts of battery-backed systems, because it's gone straight into a persistent tier. You don't have to worry about if you have a power curve. It doesn't really matter, because you can bring things back up again, and it should be as it was.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at, there's a video on our site that where we show some of the performance tests. And if you look at the memory utilization, first of all, there's only 128 gigs in the system. And secondly, memory utilization is entirely flat during all the tests, because all we use memory for is essentially to load our software. And then we don't use RAM for really anything else.
Okay, so let's go back and talk about Hero numbers in a bit more detail then. So you gave us some numbers there for your Optane environment. Can you compare that to what it would be if it wasn't Optane? Can you give us some sort of way to sort of conceptualize what those numbers look like?
Yeah, so let me talk in the scope of our world and what we tend to see from our competition. In our world, a typical all-flash array will get about 85% of the performance, the manufacturer's rate of performance of the drive. So it is very, very common for us on a 5 or 6 drive SAS-based SSD configuration to deliver hundreds of thousands of IOPS, typically 300 to 400,000 IOPS. If you move up to, say, an NVMe class technology, again, with 5 or 6 drives, we're generally getting 600 to 700,000 IOPS. And then now you bring in Intel, Intel Optane, now you're up to, you know, over 1 million IOPS with, you know, 4 or 5 of these drives, you'd be pushing 2 million IOPS in some cases. The big difference, though, in the Optane world is going to be the write IOPS, right? The write IOPS As I said before, we're seeing a sustained 300,000 write IDOPs, 300,000 plus, both on sequential and random. And those are straight write IOP numbers. There's no reads intermixed. So it's kind of what you would expect to be the worst case performance.
I think there'll be few enterprises that need more than that in a single platform, a single solution. So going back and touching on what we talked about in terms of use cases, what are you seeing people use this for? You know, we talked about the traditional applications. Is it mostly that you're seeing as customers?
Well, again, just as a company, we're really focused on storage consolidation. So we provide, you know, all the different protocols, Fibre Channel, iSCSI on block, NFS SMB on file. And we even provide object via S3. Our goal is to consolidate storage. What makes us different than maybe some of the other storage consolidation players is that we do this all through software. We don't require a hardware investment. And so our core focus is that enterprise, but we're an enterprise system that can easily become your HPC, your AI, your machine learning environment. You know, I think as Martin said earlier, most of the data center is still this core mission critical items, and those AI, MLs, I don't want to say they're experimental anymore, but they're still early days. So we allow you to baby step into that and have a system that can perform with it. We see this today even with our object storage offering. You know, people don't classically think of us as an object store, but we have a lot of customers using us for object storage because they don't have to go out and buy another system, right? They can carve out a 500 gig object storage volume and start, you know, doing their S3 test dev work on it.
But do I see the same level of performance if I'm carving that out as a chunk of capacity?
Well, you'll see similar performance. Obviously, there's more overhead with object than there would be with straight block performance. Yeah. And honestly, we didn't do any testing on object storage in the Optane environment.
The reason I ask that is just because obviously that's an area where, especially if you're not really that heavily into object storage at this particular point in time, but you want something where you can say, well, I want some capacity and I might start moving some of my data to that and my application might start writing to that. We might do a bit of work to, you know, start using it. But I don't want to be in a position where I have to go back and buy acres and acres of disk drives and build out a system that's going to cost me, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds, perhaps, in order to just get an object store platform. So that sounds like an interesting angle that you can really go into customers with and try and at least give them something different to what, you know, you'd see elsewhere, simply because you're software based.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I feel like in a year, we're going to be the worldwide leader in really small object storage implementations, right? Because we're this easy environment to work with. It's very, you know, it's very straightforward. It's four clicks to create an object store, you know, and you can start your test dev, and then, you know, see how far you can push us. Because I think one of the challenges with object storage, there's so many different ways it's used that it's hard to test every permutation. But this is certainly something you get started with. I think, as you guys probably know better than me, most object storage systems, if you don't have 100 terabytes to start with, they don't even want to talk to you, right? Well, most test dev environments are in the, you know, gigabytes to small terabytes, not, you know, 100 terabytes.
I think, again, we have raised some interesting problems over this. I mean, because the concept of high-performance object store is a bit of an anathema or a bit of a contradiction in terms in generally. So we have developers who are going to be testing their applications potentially on a small object store running on a store one. And then they're going to say, okay, that works fine. And then they're going to try and scale it out for an enterprise or move it into AWS. And they're suddenly going to realize that AWS S3 is not the most performant environment in the world, and they've made some assumptions about their sizing or what they actually need, which just don't hold true anymore.
Is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, if you are, well, it is a bad thing. Obviously, it's a bad thing if you've done that as a developer. But I just mean in terms of, does it not then make you have to go back and think, well, what am I actually getting when I'm paying for my object store? If I go to someone like Amazon, I'm not getting performance. I'm never going to get performance to the same degree. So maybe I have to rethink what my need is at that point. And I don't know, maybe we'll see more demand for higher performance object stores as a result of that. Maybe this is one of the things that is needed to sort of drive that that technology a bit further forward.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Chris. I mean, this is one of the things which our object stores is held them back is, as I say, the idea of having a high performance object store isn't really there. But it's, I mean, some of the other vendors do talk about having high performance object stores, but nothing compares to, say, a block file system, or even in some cases to an NFS file system running on Flash.
True. So all that sounds great, George. Now the big question is pricing and availability. You know, so you've been doing something slightly different on the pricing front, slightly winding up the other vendors by publishing your data online. So how's this going to get priced, and when's it going to be available for people?
Yeah, so what you're referring to there is our True Price site that allows you to, within four clicks, configure and price an enterprise class storage system. Today, it's all flash, hybrid, meaning flash and hard disk drive, or a hard disk only system, and of course, still software only too. We'll add the all flash array.next to the system, to that configuration tool. Obviously, the only configuration option will be choosing Intel Optane and Intel QLC SSDs. There'll be different capacity levels, and at each capacity level, we use a different proportion of Optane. And of course, you can always custom config all of these as well, but you'll be able to see exactly how much the system will cost, exactly what the configuration is, and what we expect the performance to be, which is actually was one of your suggestions when you first reviewed our True Price site.
Yes. I'm glad to see you took notice of me. There you go. Yeah. It wasn't just all me talking to myself. I just want to ask Martin a question related to that, though. And that's, you know, a pricing discussion really around that idea of bringing in new media. You know, when we first saw Flash come in, it was very difficult to work out whether vendors were charging us more than they should do, whether they were pricing Flash at a premium, if you like. With the way that Store One's going to be doing it, there's nowhere to hide when you start to see those Optane prices. You can't put a huge markup in it because somebody's going to see that.
I do hope and wish for more cost transparency within the industry. Some of the pricing is very opaque, so I'm going to be very interested to watching to see how True Price develops. So we can see True Price, so we can see what we're actually getting for our money.
And I think from the other thing that ties it for me is to say, well, what happens if I put three Optane drives in, or what happens if I put four in? And sometimes you might think, yeah, I will go for that extra drive, or maybe I won't. But actually, you as a vendor, George, not being worried about whether the customer's doing that, and not being sort of concerned that you wanted to put a huge markup onto those components, because that's ultimately where we've been trying to get away from in the industry.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, we are a software company, right? So hardware is kind of a means to an end, for lack of a better word, for us to deliver some of the results that our customers want. What they're going to see with the all-flash array.next is pricing that is should be less expensive than anybody else's all-flash array, any other, you know, top-tier manufacturer's all-flash array. So they'll get this better performance at a measurably lower price. In fact, my belief is the only people that will offer a better price on a regular all-flash array system versus the all-flash array .next is us. And you'll be able to see exactly what the difference in configurations are. You'll be able to change your mind. You know, Chris, one of the things you were mentioning there, we see it all the time in activity on the True Price site, is a person will click on, you know, a mid-tier capacity, and it'll sit there for a little bit, and then they'll click on a higher tier capacity. My assumption there is they go, oh, I could afford that. I wonder how much this much more capacity will cost, right? And so it really gives you the ability to compare and contrast the different options for you.
Yeah. So if people want to go and learn more, where should we point them to, George? I guess the Storage Switzerland stuff is all integrated into Store One now. So all of your previous content, is it still available, or are you creating brand new stuff? And what's the website, etc.?
Sure. For the Storage Switzerland stuff, I'm still creating content, just slower because I've got a full-time job now. So that's still storageswiss.com. And then all flash array.next with the Optane drives is all going to be on store1.com. So it's and that's STORONE, so no E in the middle, .com. And then you'll see all kinds of stuff that'll point you. The True Price thing is right off the main page there, and you can price. You can go into detail on Optane. We'll have detailed information, independent lab reviews, so you'll be able to look. So you don't have to necessarily take our numbers for it. We'll have reviews from other people that will show that information.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you joining us today. It's been really interesting to understand where this is going to go. Well, what we will hold you to is to come back in 12 months' time, if not before, and tell us exactly whether you have developed, you know, the smallest, fastest object storage platform around, but actually probably more importantly to tell us, you know, how far this has gone and what the experiences are with people taking the Optane platform and putting it in a solution. But for now, George, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for having me. Great conversation, guys.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.